Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Robert Spretnak. I'm the attorney for Leanne Archuleta. I would like to try to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, but I know that's going to be a difficult request to adhere to. What's key in this particular case, and we're here on a summary judgment that we say should not have been granted had the prior appellate decision by this court been given the proper weight by the district court judge. And so this is the second time this case has been before an appellate panel. And this is a very straightforward application of the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Crawford v. Metro Government of Nashville in that it's uncontested. Ms. Archuleta never used magic words that this was sexual harassment, but she did say in response to questioning that she felt that Harley Lappin, the chief corrections officer for the company, a very, very high-ranking executive, when he grabbed her hand and kind of held it for an uncomfortably long period of time, she thought it was odd and she felt uncomfortable. That was her report. And under the standard of this court enunciated previously and under Crawford v. Metro Government, that is enough to meet the standard for protected opposition activity. What's key here is to pay attention to kind of two timelines. And the first is the incident happened July 31st, 2013, the prison tour. August 22nd, 2013, Harley Lappin writes an email where he makes all sorts of accusations against Ms. Archuleta in that she's going around the prison saying that she was molested, that she's going to use this incident in for her protection later on, which is a very bizarre statement considering that Ms. Archuleta had a perfect record, clean record of 20 years. So why this sudden thought that she's going to need this for protection is very bizarre. August 23rd, this email gets forwarded to the outside attorney who's conducting the sexual harassment investigation. So Ms. Archuleta's comments about it being odd and making her uncomfortable were said in the context of a sexual harassment investigation, and she did not ask for it. And she gets interviewed by an attorney who's telling her that, about that there's an accusation that she said she was molested. I mean, if you're saying, and the incident was caught on tape, but if because this was a prison, and everything pretty much that happens within the four walls of the prison is going to be captured by surveillance video for the most part. So it was captured on video, and she desperately does not want to be labeled as somebody who's accusing the chief corrections officer, one of the highest ranking executives in the company, of molesting her. And so she denies that she was molested, but she makes it clear in the interview that she thought it was odd. It made her uncomfortable. And at that point, based upon the law of this case that this court previously enunciated, that is enough to state protected opposition. So there should not have even been an issue of whether she stated protective opposition, whether she's engaged in protected opposition. But instead, the district court described her behavior as the antithesis of protected opposition when she did exactly what this court had already said was legitimate opposition. So she, again, like I said, did not use the magic words, but she really, very clearly was engaged in protected opposition. And she's interviewed on September 3rd, continuing with this timeline. And on September 9th, she receives the first disciplinary write-up in her career, something that was foreshadowed by Harley Lappin's email of August 22nd, that we knew that was coming at this point. And so on September 9, the retaliation campaign against Leanne Archuleta for just merely saying that she thought Harley Lappin's actions were odd and made her uncomfortable, causing a sexual harassment investigation to be launched. Suddenly, she's a target. And so the second timeline comes up because she has engaged in protected opposition according to Crawford and the standards of this court. So there's an incident on February 6 or 7. It was late at night, so it's kind of unclear calendar-wise which date it was, but it was late evening, early morning, February 6, February 7, where there's an incident involving a release of an inmate out of segregation. Segregation in the prison context, and I know Judge Pragerson has worked with the California Department of Corrections, so he's probably more familiar with inmate segregation issues than I am. But this was an issue of releasing an inmate from segregation, and the inmate was not released from segregation. And apparently there's an issue of whether, you know, what Leah and Archuleta's involvement in, quote, endangering the life and safety of two corrections officers that were ordered to tell the inmate the truth about why he was being released from segregation. Now, the evidence in the record is Leanne Archuleta merely passed along to the corrections officers the directive from her assistant warden, Michael Dickens, who she reported to tell the truth. She didn't get into what the truth was. She said, tell the truth to the inmate, because that's one of the core principles of Corrections Corporation, now known as CoreCivic, that truthfulness is supposed to be a policy that is followed. She tells the inmate, passing on a directive, no addition. There's no evidence that she somehow added to that. And she gets fired, suspended on March 31st, and then fired on June 4th. What's kind of interesting is she was accused of endangering the life of two corrections officers, yet she continued to work for 8 weeks, which is strong evidence that this was just a pretext, that they decided this was the best that they had to get rid of the person who got Harley Lappin in trouble, the chief corrections officer in trouble. It clearly has evidence is put in the record that this was pretextual.
So, Mr. Spretnik, let me just ask, can I ask you just one question?
Please.
I understand that the district court granted summary judgment on the first element of her prima facie case.
Correct.
Protected activity.
Correct.
And that's all the district court decided.
Correct. It didn't go beyond that because it said she was not. She was engaged in the antithesis of protected activity.
Correct.
So the court never got to
that. So if we were to agree with you, we would send this back. We should send this case back to the district court to complete the analysis.
You could do that. We would ask that it be reversed and remanded for trial, because we think that the evidence, because you've got authority to review this de novo, that I think it's pretty clear that we've put evidence in the record of pretext. That's all that we need to do, is put evidence in the record of the pretext. If we've made out the prima facie case, it's pretty clear, according to the prior decision, and according to Crawford, she was engaged in protected opposition. She suffered an adverse job action. That's undisputed. She was fired on June 4th, 2014. It's undisputed that the employer offered up the legitimate non-discriminatory reason. It's this incident of February 6th, February 7th that they said was the basis of the termination. And then we get the pretext analysis. And we think, because you are to review this de novo, that we've put in the record the sufficient evidence of the pretext, so we can just have it reversed and remanded for trial. We don't need to further delay the proceedings with further adjudication. But okay, there was no assessment beyond that.
Should we hear from the
Can I ask a question?
Oh, sure, Judge Rawlinson. Yes.
As a procedural matter, counsel, is there a distinction, because in the prior decision, we were determining whether or not a claim had been plausibly stated, and here on appeal, we're here on summary judgment. Does that make a difference in terms of whether or not we are bound by the prior decision of a panel?
In this particular instance, yes, because evidence was put in the record to back up what was said in the pleadings, that she testified under oath, it's in the record, that in the course of this sexual harassment investigation of September 3rd, she felt that Lappin's actions were odd and it made her feel uncomfortable. And she, you know, it's clear that she didn't use the term molested, but it was odd and uncomfortable. So therefore she put the evidence in the record to back up what this court has already said was protected opposition.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Paez, I think you were following up on a question.
I was going to ask, do you have anything further, or we can just hear from the...
I'll save the remaining 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. All right. That's good. All right. Counsel for Corrections Corporation's what is it? Corrections Corporation of America.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd like to briefly address Judge Rawlinson's point. She's absolutely correct.
So you're Katie Branson?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Judge Rawlinson had asked opposing counsel if there was perhaps a difference between the panel's ruling at the motion for summary or motion to dismiss stage that a claim had been sufficiently pled to withstand Iqbal Twombly and be permitted to proceed versus how the court should view the evidence once it's uncovered in discovery 3 to 4 years later. And absolutely, it's a different assessment. The court was simply saying the complaint says that she believed Mr. Lappin's behavior was odd and uncomfortable, and that she spoke with an investigator for CCA about that. And the court found that sufficient to establish a pleading of a prima facie case for protected activity. Now, what's considerably problematic is that Ms. Archuleta, and this is ER 182 to 183, is her sworn statement to the investigator on September 3rd, 2013, and no less than six times does she say that she had, quote, "I have no problems with my interactions with Mr. Lappin. If I felt it was inappropriate, I would have filed a written report. I understand the reporting process. It is insane that somebody reported this event as somehow
isn't
being
that,
inappropriate."
Isn't that all explainable with analogy to what you always see in domestic violence cases where people are afraid? When you've worked at a place for 20 years and they're now afraid that there might be some consequence, because I understand that after she made the report, the company itself conducted an investigation. So by then it was on the radar, and she had already received, I believe, some indication that she had received a critical performance evaluation at the time of the medical statement, right?
Thank you, Your Honor. I will address both points that you...
Am I correct? I asked you a question. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So therefore, you know, when a primary purpose of the law is to protect victims, when they retract something later on, we still have to be mindful of the context, and all of that can be subject to, I suppose, cross-examination concerning her credibility in trial. But I fail to see how it impacts on the opposition component of the analysis.
First, Your Honor, she did not ever retract this statement. So this was entered September 3rd, 2013. She never retracted it, even questioned about it in deposition. She agreed that this was her statement and this is the way she felt.
I'm not suggesting that she retracted it. I'm giving you an explanation for why she wouldn't have retracted it.
Except she never made that argument until this appellate brief, saying I was scared for my job and therefore said this. She never disavowed this statement throughout the entire discovery process.
Why is that such an unusual thing to happen? For all she knows, she's hoping to get rehired. For all she knows, there are other, you know, I don't know, retirement consequences, benefit consequences, other issues. So I guess I'm just questioning the value of her subsequent statements.
So I agree. I think the subsequent statements have no value. I think the value is ER 182, where she submitted it in response to the investigation, saying, at no time did I feel that this was in any way inappropriate, and actually says she felt it was insane that someone reported it. Also, Ms. Archuleta argues that she told the investigator it was odd and uncomfortable. Again, in this statement, this sworn statement, she does not say odd and uncomfortable anywhere. I combed through it, so I'm still trying to figure out where in the record, other than her complaint and a self-serving affidavit submitted in response to a motion for summary judgment, how she can change the statement that she actually gave to the investigator and make it fit her narrative. In addition, this statement is completely consistent with the Crawford court's indication that this is not oppositional behavior. And in fact, I have a quote from the Crawford court. Opposition for purposes of protected activity is to resist or antagonize, to contend against, to confront, resist, withstand. And that's at page 274 and again at 276, defining what oppositional behavior is. And reading this statement verbatim, it is absolutely consistent with what the district court said, the antithesis of oppositional behavior. She wrote this statement on her own. She testified. She went back to her
office. Why did she report it then?
She did not report it. She did not report it. She even testified that she did not report it in her deposition. She never reported this behavior. Warden Collins had a concern because Miss Archuleta had printed out a picture of Mr. Lappin and put it on a whiskey bottle, was talking about how she was going to write a book about all of the things she's seen at CCA. She was laughing, although misconstrued in the briefing as molested in the typical context of the word, which is a very problematic word, understandably. Well,
but the company did an investigation. They had a lawyer do an investigation.
Absolutely.
So that seems inconsistent with your characterization of this being a big zero.
The reason that they did that was because Miss Archuleta kept laughing and joking and talking about how this was going to go in her memoirs. So what Warden Collins did is out of an abundance of caution and to simply close the loop on this issue and ensure there was no issue, she told her supervisor or asked that this third party investigation be conducted. She went above and beyond under the circumstances because Ms. Archuleta's joking behavior about this, consistent with statements, authenticated statements from Ms. LaToya Douglas and Warden Collins, that she was laughing and thought it was a huge joke. And they
aren't
just wanted
questions,
to make...
Aren't those questions a fact?
Respectfully, Your Honor, within the totality of this and with this statement, I don't think so. Nothing remains to go to the jury. And I did want to address also, you had mentioned a timing issue. What's also absent from the briefing by Ms. Archuleta is the fact that the audit in terms of the PREA violation that occurred in Ms. Archuleta's department was completed before what's been referred to as the ring incident where Mr. Lappin held her hand and looked at her ring and made a comment about it. It was completed before that time, and she was interviewed on September 3rd, 2013. The discipline issued August 31st. It was sitting on a desk being signed because it gets issued and then reviewed and then signed. It was sitting on a desk to be signed before it could be issued to her. But there's a clear problem with the nexus between what Ms. Archuleta claims happened and with the timing. If the audit was completed and the discipline issued, not handed to her, but issued and signed before the ring incident even occurred, and certainly before she interviewed on September 3rd, how could it have been in retaliation? And the same issue.
She was eventually fired, wasn't she?
Correct. And I actually, thank you, Your Honor. That's exactly where I was going, because with respect to that issue, when she instructed her subordinates to tell the truth about the fact that they had expressed concerns about the safety for an inmate that she had already greenlighted to be moved out of segregation, when she told them that, these two subordinates who complained to their supervisors and their higher-ups about her instruction, which regardless of what she speculates, they testify, and or we have admissible statements from them saying that they feared for their safety if they told this inmate that it was their responsibility that he wasn't moved. But setting all that aside, they have testified under oath, sworn statements, that they had no idea about the ring incident. and the third party investigator who conducted the investigation and obtained witness statements from 15 individuals as part of this safety violation by Ms. Archuleta and Mr. Dickens. She also submitted a sworn declaration. She had no idea about the ring incident when she gave her recommendation concerning Ms. Archuleta's misconduct and endangering the safety of her subordinates. And on top of that, of the individuals who were interviewed, as best as we can tell from the record, only two of them actually knew about the ring incident, and that was Gordon Collins and Ms. Archuleta herself. So it's even if this court were to determine protected activity occurred, which it is highly unlikely it did under the Crawford status for what oppositional behavior consists of, the timing is simply off, and the knowledge of the individuals involved is off. There's no evidence that the third party about the ring incident, and certainly the evidence suggests to the contrary for the February 2014 incident that anybody with who was conducting the investigation or was involved in it or had made the complaint about their own safety knew about it. Completely to the contrary. And I would point out also Mr. Harland, Sergeant Harland, who had made the complaint about Ms. Archuleta's directive to him and Mr. Dickens' directive to him, specifically explained why he felt that his safety was in danger. And he authenticates this as well. And he said, he told him, and this is Harland ERTV, he told him that he needed to tell Smith that he was not getting out of segregation because of Harland and Donlin, what they had said about him and the Norteños. Harland was, quote, kind of in shock. He noted that typically after the weekly SHU reviews, the detainees are told that the committee has made a decision. Harland does not have the power or authority to make the decision to
We lost you, Ms. Branson. Ms. Branson? Ms. Branson?
In the last year, in response
Ms. Branson?
To what he wanted.
We lost you there for about 30 seconds.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Can I just interrupt you right there? I just have one question I want to ask you, similar to what I asked your opposition counsel. If we were to disagree with you and with what the district court did on the first element of the prima facie case.
Yes, Your Honor.
What should we do?
You should determine that there's no causation. You should determine that for us now. It doesn't make sense that this case has drug on so long. Despite Ms. Archuleta disavowing throughout the entirety of the case, as early as the investigation, that she was ever subject to sexual harassment and that she ever had a problem with any of the interactions, which although characterized as grasping her hand and fondling, which is extremely overblown, she says was a 6-second incident where he simply looked at her ring. And she couldn't even remember, at least at the time of the statement.
Well, this is a retaliation claim. It's not a discrimination claim.
Correct. You're correct, Your Honor. But the person in engaging in the activity, it must be oppositional activity in order to be protected activity. And she...
It has to be reasonable belief, I think.
Correct. So if she says... verbatim that this is not a that she does not believe this was sexual harassment, and her sworn statement on page 2 of the statement, she specifically says in no way did she think this was sexual harassment, and also she says it wasn't inappropriate, it's insane anybody reported as inappropriate, it wasn't weird, it wasn't strange, it was weird that she was having a discussion about it. All of that is completely pulling back from oppositional behavior and therefore not protected activity. But there's also no causation because the timing and the knowledge of the PREA discipline is the timing, lack of timing, lack of knowledge, because it was issued before.
Do you understand the district court's ruling as saying that there was no oppositional activity, or simply that it, as the district court said, her subsequent actions undermined her initial complaint?
I understood the district court judge's ruling to be that she did not engage in oppositional activity at any time during the entire investigation into the Ring incident.
Well, what did the district court mean by undermine it, her subsequent affidavit or subsequent statements?
Well, I believe she meant that on the September 3rd, 2013 sworn statement that Ms. Archuleta presented, where she completely disavowed any misconduct by Mr. Lappin or that she had any problem with the conduct whatsoever. I believe that what the court intended was that her complaint saying that she felt uncomfortable was completely belied by the evidence in the record of her own sworn statement where she said it was no big deal.
Let me ask, doesn't opposition activity also encompass like answering the questions of the investigator that came out to interview her?
If it's not engaged in opposition, then no. And let me tell you why I believe that and why I believe Crawford supports that. Crawford even specifically says in dicta, when they're explaining to why there might be an exception where you're answering questions and it wouldn't constitute oppositional behavior, they said if the person being interviewed is talking about a supervisor making racist remarks and then comments that those remarks were hilarious, that would potentially undermine that individual's claim that they were engaged in oppositional protected activity if they are also saying, well, those offensive remarks were hilarious to me. And I would say that's consistent with Ms. Archuleta's behavior. She didn't say it was hilarious, but she said she didn't have a problem with it, and she thought it was insane that anybody brought it up. He was just looking at her ring.
Okay, let's hear, you had some rebuttal time left.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have tremendous respect for Ms. Branson, but I do need to correct a horrible mistake that she had made in her oral argument. She's referring to ER 182 and 183. She at least a dozen times called it a sworn statement. It is not a sworn statement. It's not a statement made under oath. There's it's not notarized. There's nothing in here to show that it's a sworn statement. It's just something she desperately was trying to save her job with when she was told that she was accusing Harley Lappin of molesting her. In her deposition, they were never asked her whether the statements in here are true. They only asked her, is this your statement? Is this your signature? There was no inquiry into whether those statements are true or not. What was said under oath, what is said as sworn testimony, unlike just this statement, the sworn testimony is that it was odd and it made her uncomfortable. I mean, the most interesting factual dispute here is actually within defendant's own testimony, in that you've got Warden Collins on the one hand saying she never saw any sexual harassment, but on the other hand saying Leanne Archuleta was going around the prison saying she was molested by Harley Lappin. Clearly, they thought that she was stating opposition. Now, we say it wasn't that she was going around saying she was molested, but that's the mindset of this employer, that Leanne Archuleta was saying that she had been molested. And that is serious opposition, if that's to that. So their own inconsistencies on whether she was molested or was it sexual harassment, that's something for the jury to decide. And Judge Pragerson made some very good points about drawing the correct inferences as to why somebody would be desperately pleading when confronted with the idea that she was accusing a high-level executive of molesting her, why somebody would desperately try to downplay it and save their job. But it was already too late. Harley Lappin had written his email on August 22nd, which kind of makes the timeline we were discussing kind of interesting, where they say, well, it was written on August 30th, but not given to her until the 9th after the interview. Well, August 30th means that it was still written after Harley Lappin sent his email and after Harley Lappin's email was sent to Robert Horton, the outside attorney. So clearly, Harley Lappin and the warden were treating Leanne Archuleta as a problem child at the time that this write-up supposedly was written on August 30th, but we've got no evidence that it was correctly dated. Warden Collins signed it on the 9th. Leanne Archuleta said she got it on the 9th. It's from the 9th. That's the evidence in the record. The other thing on the issue of pretext, I want to real quickly visit, where it talks about two statements. Well, one of the statements from Michael Donlan doesn't even accuse Leanne Archuleta of having any contact with him, of saying anything to him. So the Donilon statement is meaningless because it's got nothing to do with what Leanne Archuleta did. The Harlan statement uses a lot of lawyerese with inter alia and that, but he never says, Leanne Archuleta told me. So that's not enough to be undisputed evidence there. And I also want to point out what Ms. Branson says, well, it was just 6 seconds, okay? Let me shake your hand. If I hold that handshake 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 4 seconds, 5 seconds, 6 seconds, that feels odd, doesn't it? That feels very uncomfortable. So the fact that it's a mere 6 seconds when somebody's holding your hand, that's going to make it feel odd and that's going to feel uncomfortable. So 6 seconds is a long time to hold a handshake. And the other kind of thing I'll mention real briefly with regard to this statement that the court used, an unsworn statement, is, you know, I'm reminded of kind of a story I heard about it. And I'm not equating Corrections Corporation to the Soviet Union, but Joseph Stalin gives a speech in 1937. And the crowd stands up and applauds because it's Stalin. You have to applaud. And the applause goes on for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 12, 13, 14 minutes. And everybody's still wildly applauding and they're about ready to pass out. Finally, one gentleman, the manager of a local paper factory, sits down. He is then arrested by the KGB that night and sent to the gulag for 10 years. Okay, is it a defense of Stalin to say, well, you know, it wasn't because of his sitting down. He was applauding for 15 minutes. Well, you know, he wasn't applauding good enough for that thing. So, and much like this, she tries to look like the good apparatchik, but she still let it go that she felt it odd and uncomfortable. So I ask you.
Okay, with that comment, you're right on the time button. So with that, we thank you. And the matter is submitted at this time. Thanks to both counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, bye now. That ends our session for today.